Hello, I'm Tom Edwards, standing in for Andrew Tuck this week. You're listening to Tall Stories on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. Residents of London and regular visitors here will be aware of the hundreds of blue plaques attached to buildings big and small, grand and humble, old and new, across the city. These little round signs mark the places, homes and businesses where various famous or noteworthy figures from the past were born, lived and worked. The blue plaque scheme, now run by English Heritage, began all the way back in 1866, making it the oldest such initiative anywhere in the world. There are now well over 900 blue plaques in London, with more being added every year, as Monocle's Sophie Monaghan-Coombs reports.
Around the corner from Monocle's London office is a row of townhouses. They all look alike. Creamy stone bay windows surrounded by wrought iron railings. They have small balconies, some with tables and chairs, giving the residents views over the central garden of the square. One house, however, stands out a little. Number 34 has a small disc attached to its wall, bearing the name of one of Britain's most famous musicians. It reads, John Lennon, 1940 to 1980, musician and songwriter, lived here in 1968. The summer that year that Lennon lived in this house, the Beatles released Hey Jude and later the White Album. As he was making some of the songs at the very centre of the British pop music canon and lyrics that have embedded themselves in the minds of not only this country but around the world, he was living here. There are hundreds of these blue plaques around London, celebrating historical figures by linking them to buildings in which they were born, lived or worked. If you've ever wandered the streets of this city, you've probably noticed a few. But I wanted to find out a bit more about the scheme. Where did it come from and who gets to decide who's worthy of being enshrined in circular ceramic? I spoke to Howard Spencer, senior historian for blue plaques at English Heritage, to find out who's behind the initiative and the role of the plaques in telling the story of London to those who live or visit here.
They first went up in 1867. First one was either in late 66 or 67, and it was to Lord Byron, and it was just off Oxford Street. That's not there anymore, but the plaque to Napoleon III, French Emperor, which is just off St. James's Square, that went up in 1867 as well, and that very much is still there. It was the Society of Arts, now the Royal Society of Arts, that put them up for the first 35 years or so. They put up about one or two a year, so not too many. It was the London County Council took it on in the early years of the 20th century. And from then on, it became very much a regular thing. The only real sort of hiatuses were during the two world wars.
So if we go up to the present, who is it that gets to decide who's recognised by the plaques?
So there is a panel of experts drawn from various historical disciplines who are experts in particular areas in which we receive the public nominations, because it's a public scheme, runs by nominations. So the panel sits three times a year and they sift through the nominations received and they choose the ones to be given further research into the addresses. We choose hopefully the best possible address from all viewpoints to put the plaque on, and that's basically how it happens.
And what kind of historical figures are the plaques trying to commemorate?
Well, it's incredibly eclectic, and I think that's one of its strengths. It covers basically all areas of human endeavour. That's what it tries to do. So it's people that work in the entertainment field, but also scientists, also educators, artists, writers. It's pretty well everybody. And it's not just individuals either. There are some plaques that are to groups. For example, there's a plaque to the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood, group of artists. And there are some that even commemorate events. It is incredibly broad.
The plaques create a new map of the city, one populated by reasons to celebrate London's heritage, musical, literary, political, scientific, and otherwise. They include both household names and more unusual choices. The plaque to Mary Hughes in Bethnal Green describes her as friend of all in need. In the early 20th century, Hughes worked as a social worker, converting a pub in East London into a refuge for those who needed sanctuary. For Howard, the diversity of those honoured with plaques helps tell the complex story of the city.
I think they are a very important sort of reminder that we are, as it were, standing on the shoulder of giants. And it's, you know, there are many people that went before us. They also just function as a reminder that the buildings are about a bit more than bricks and mortar. They're about the lives of those who went before.
When I spoke to Howard, the final plaque of the year was about to be unveiled.
That one's to Helena Normanton, who was a pioneering woman barrister. She was one of the first women barristers to practice in the early 20th century. And that's going up where she was living when she was training and during the early part of her career in the 1920s in Bloomsbury.
As well as telling the physical history of the city and its residents, serving in quite a unique way as a form of free public education, the blue plaques have a role in preserving the cityscape itself.
It's important to emphasise that the plaques are not just about the individual concerned, because most of them do commemorate individuals. They're also about the buildings, about the link between the person and the building. And in that way, they do function as a kind of soft power in helping to preserve historic buildings. There are a number of examples of where the plaque on a building doesn't confer legislative protection. It's not like listing or anything like that, but where it has raised awareness, creates a kind of virtuous circle. People want to preserve a building if they know it had an interesting personal association. I think that's an underrated feature of the scheme, and it was intended by its founders that it would work as a means of preserving buildings, and I think it has.
You've been listening to Tall Stories, a Monocle 24 production. Our thanks to Sophie Monaghan-Coombs for today's episode. Remember to tune in on Thursdays for the full 30-minute edition of The Urbanist. I'm Tom Edwards, standing in this week for Andrew Tuck. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, city lovers.